What's up? It's Casey, and I know that those of you out there might have had some really shitty supervision. Guess what? You're not special. But Snava has now partnered with Tracker, which is a documentation system that allows you to easily track your progress through your training hours to become a behavior analyst. It helps you organize your restricted versus unrestricted hours, follow supervision guidelines, and adhere to the expectation of the board if ever audited. Yikes. We keep it all for you for the 7 years. Having all of this information in one place will make it easier for both you and your supervisor to have an easier time reviewing progress and making changes when needed, based on what you need to learn when training to become a BCBA. Using the guided task list within Tracker allows the supervisor and trainee to monitor progress during the entire supervision experience, making life easier and tracking not suck. So head over to fieldworktracker.com and see how Snava has teamed up to make supervision not suck. Love you, mean it.
It's behavior, bitches.
Hey guys, it's Liat.
And Casey.
Before we go any further with today's episode, obviously we have to give ourselves that reinforcement, or you guys give it to us and we read it to ourselves. So, Casey, go ahead. What do we have today?
All right. This is from Kate with an IT, not Kate with a TE.
No, she's Kate very... with an AI, not with a ATE.
AT. Yeah. You get it. I think I'm dyslexic. Anyways, thank you for leaving this. It's so sweet. She said, just an RBT. Hey guys, it's Kate here. I started listening to y'all a few years ago before I became an RBT. I absolutely love your podcast and the episodes with Nicole have been fire. I love how you take the principles and discuss it in the real world. You've made me want to go back to school to become a BCBA and have taught me that I don't have to stay in the realm of autism. Keep the episodes coming and please keep pointing out and explaining where we see ABA in our everyday lives. Love ya, mean it. That is the goal. So I'm happy that we are meeting it. And thank you for leaving the review. It means so much to us.
Yeah. And when I hear people doing things outside of autism, not that I want to push people outside of autism because it's obviously so needed, but it's great. It means that we're getting out there and, you know, we have a speaker here that we sell, study notes, and it's behavior analysis can save the world. And if used correctly, okay, I will just put that little nugget in there. And it's really true. Like, once we understand the science, we're able to apply it to many areas. It's really cool what we could do. So I'm happy that Kate AI took this from our podcast and now we'll keep going. So thanks so much. Okay, what's been going on? Well, Casey and I both last night at 3:30 a.m. were texting each other. I texted her. It was so weird. I texted her at 3:30 and I'm like, dude, my sheets are soaked. Not like that, you perverts. And she's like, oh my God, me too. I'm actually in the bathtub right now. It was like weird. I got like her response latency was literally 30 seconds.
I just switched from one side of the bed to the other because I was too lazy to like get a towel or anything. I was like, what is going on? I like changed my outfit. And I'm never up at that time. Liat is usually like a night owl. I am dead. But I was like, oh, I have to get in the tub. And then I come lay back down. I couldn't sleep. And then I don't know. It was weird though. Like, are we like connected that much that like we're both sweating?
But I feel better for her. Like I have been like in the world's longest cold.
Literally, and it's been like 2 months.
Yeah, like even lost my hearing, then it turned into my and like the worst cough, and the cough like literally busted a rib that caused me to like cough up blood. Today's the first day my rib doesn't hurt and my throat's not hurting, so. I don't want to say anything like and jinx myself. But anyways, that's happening over here.
Today's behavioral principles are nature versus nurture, conditioning, learning history, generalization, contingency-shaped behavior, task analysis, technological.
But without further ado, I think we should talk about our guest, who I'm so excited to have here today. Our guest is someone I was lucky enough to be on their podcast. And I felt so cool being on someone's podcast. Like, I don't think about it as cool when I'm doing my own, but it felt cool being on someone else's. And with that, Casey, why don't you tell us a little bit about our guest?
All right. So it's been a long time. We've been talking about bringing him on, and we're so excited. His name is Arthur Hairston, and he is actually a former SNAVA student turned BCBA. Yeah. So excited to be able to bring on past student who's doing amazing stuff. He is a dynamic entrepreneur with a passion for creating positive change in the lives of individuals with intellectual disabilities. He has a proven track record in applied behavior analysis services, and he's so excited to share his journey in entrepreneurship and his commitment to fostering inclusive communities. He also has an awesome podcast called The Behavioral Business Blueprint, which talks about the behavioral health of businesses and how to create successful ventures, which is so important. And as entrepreneurs ourselves, and we know the ins and outs and struggles of creating a business and trying to forge your own path. And he also does a whole other stuff, and he'll talk to you about that when he gets here. But welcome to the show, Arthur.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited. This has been a long time coming.
Sure has.
When you took our collective, right?
Yes, I did.
What year was that?
That would have been early 2019, I believe. Maybe
2019, I was going to say that.
Casey, yeah. Your collective?
No, I was teaching when he was in it. I had just started.
Yes.
What, you become one of your teachers? Yeah.
February 20th of 2020.
And I was February of 2018.
When did you become BCBA case?
2019 February.
Okay, so we were all February, but like 1 year off. I was 18, you were 19.
Boom, boom, boom.
Good month.
I know.
You used to have to choose like a time period. That's why we all have to take it in February.
Just so happened to get my results back. That's when they just started it. So instead of waiting for what was 6 weeks, you got them right then.
Yeah.
And so I've been the past.
You were probably the first cohort that got them back that quick. Yeah, we had to wait. That was a nightmare. God.
That was painful.
The old days.
I know. Took me 6 times, so I know the other 5 times were...
Damn, I didn't know that!
Yeah, I failed a lot of times. It's not fun to fail around, the holiday season, especially Christmas, because my birthday's the 15th, and you got Christmas, a new year, and it's just, so depressing to see your kids happy, and you see these failed results, and it's like, oh my gosh, I don't want to smile.
There's never a good time for them. You know what I realize in life? It's never a good time to fail a test, or you don't feel it, right? Okay. It's never a good time to have a health issue, mm-hmm. And it's never a good time to have a breakup, a birthday mm-hmm. is coming up, Valentine's Day. So there's things in life that's just I don't care if it's good for you or not. You just got to make time for it right now. But look at you on the other side now. And
yes, looking on the other side, yes, I can agree with all of that, but when you're going through it, you do not. Oh, it hurts.
So give a little advice on how, for our students listening that are maybe multiple time test takers, now that you said that, what is a little advice you can give them?
Well, besides taking your course, just keep breathing. That's what I would say. That's probably one of the things I didn't do. A lot of times I thought that I could just, read a few notes, skip here and there. I would say definitely read. You're going to read the whole book. You are going to read it. Just get over it.
Talking about the Cooper book, anyone?
Yes. If you read that, that helps a lot. Of course, you're taking and just find something that you enjoy that makes you smile or something you're working towards. For me, my original goal that I was happy that I wanted to reach with passing the test was, oh man, I'll finally be able to work and get home when there's still daylight. That's what I told myself. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to be able to take my kids to school and pick them up. That was my whole big thing I was looking forward to.
That was your why?
Yeah, it was one of them. It was just very simple. Yeah. I said, man, I'm working all these hours as an RBT. And I said, man, I could probably work half the hours and still get, the same pay. And some kind of way I got into all this other stuff. So I still find a way to pick my kids up and take them to school if I don't have to be at the group home covering the shift.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. That's going to lead us into our next part. So just explain this. Okay. So you have, and also when I did my podcast with you, I just realized I want to clarify. You always talk about your kids. Are these your biological kids?
Yes. Yes. Me and my wife's kids. Yes. We have
I realize, and we're going to get into the other part later on, that you also call the kids in your group home your kids, which I actually like.
I do, because I have one, our first kid.
I remember mid-show, I was like, wait, what? Whoa, you're not supposed to call your kid. But I guess maybe you were like switching between.
I know I do that because the kids, a lot of them, especially our first kid that we had, he always calls me daddy, like, daddy, are we going someplace? And I just kind of go with it because they have no parents, literally.
They need that.
No family. Yeah. So I just kind of go with it.
Talk about who we're talking about. What do you do?
Okay. So I'm co-owner, my wife's the co-owner of a group home for kids with autism here in Florida.
Okay. And this is kids, guys. This is what I think is interesting to hear, because immediately, even when I was on your podcast, you talked about a group home, and it's just funny how we already have these frames, right? Am I using frames right, Case? Frames set up that it's like, oh, it must be adults, right? Because you hear about a lot of group homes and adults, and that's my point of reference, you know, my brother and stuff. And then he said something, and I was like, wait, what? And he's like, no, it's actually kids. Like, what are the ages of people who live in your group home?
Yeah, ours right now between 7 and 12 right now.
7 and 12. Okay. And can you tell me about these individuals?
Yeah. So we have, I think, what, 2 7-year-olds, one nonverbal. I think if you think of autism, it's probably what you imagine. Nonverbal, screams a lot. We've been working on that. Not potty trained. We are really working on that. That is not fun to have a 7-year-old in. Change poop. The house, I'm still trying to find something that can make the house smell good so we can get that smell out when it happens. And then our older ones, they're both 12 and probably one more high functioning. Another one, kind of quiet, talks, but he's a toe walker. So imagine, 12 being a toe walker. So it's just interesting just going through the process of trying to find, the help to stop that, because if you're a toe walker, that's like, it brings a lot of problems later on in life and curing problems too, because that's a lot of weight to put on your toes. I mean, I'm sure some ballerinas probably are upset, but that is not fun.
Ballerinas also have like these eating regimens that they have to stay like a twig in order to put that weight on their toes,
Oh, yeah. And trust me, he has some weight, a little bit of weight. And I'm like, I'm amazed. I'm just, sometimes I'll catch myself trying to see, like, how do you do that? Like, permanently. So it's interesting, because once they come into your care, you're responsible for a lot of stuff. They have caseworkers that, do their best to set appointments, but we have to take them. So I'm in there and I'm learning stuff at the same time. I'm learning different things when it comes to toe walkers. They're saying, oh, well, we can give them, we'll see if we can get them a couple of shots of that stuff for your lips. Sometimes people get it on their lips.
Filler?
It's not a filler.
Botox?
Botox, yes. They said, well, we can try a couple of shots of Botox. And I'm like, I thought Botox, I'm thinking usually I see people use it for their face. I never thought about the muscles. And they said, that's just one part to see if we can relax it enough. But then there's, they talk about surgery. And when we got our kid that came to us, he came in 2 casts and that was supposed to help the toe walking. It was amazing that after the cast came off, he recovered after a couple of weeks.
Well, right,
he was back to toe walking. And I've read some things that said that surgery is not 100%, certain that's going to work. And to see that, to see somebody that's in pain in these boots thinking, oh, when they get them off, they're just going to be able to walk, and they're back to walking how they were before.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So
such a learned behavior.
These individuals, where are they coming from before they come to your house?
Before us, they come from, for us, since we are licensed, we can take kids from all over the state of Florida. So our kids come from one area of Florida right now. Some of them have just been in the system, hopping from home to home.
And that's the foster care system?
The foster care system, because the goal is they never want to put kids in a group home setting. That's like last resort. We can't find anything. So now you're talking about kids with autism. And that's very different. You know, you might have plenty of foster parents out there that would take kids, but you say autism, you look at some of the behaviors to them, you know, they don't want to deal with it. To me, I feel like I'm in Disney because I'm like, I've been working with this population since almost high school. So when they come to us, I'm enjoying seeing, okay, what's going on with them? I'm looking at them like, okay, we need to get a behavior plan put together. Mm-hmm. What are our goals? What are we working on? So same thing you would do with an ABA treatment plan. We kind of do with our kids, not as in depth because we're not dealing with insurance and trying to word things to fit what insurance wants to say.
Which actually might be nice in some places.
Yeah. And that honestly depends too on your license, because we're with our Department of Children and Families here in Florida, but we also have another licensing agency that deals more with insurance. So it might change. And it's pretty amazing once you get into this world to see that there are two different licenses in Florida and you can't be dually licensed because statutes contradict each other. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I just want to help kids.
So you can only wear like one hat at a time.
Yes. Yeah, so a lot of our kids, they need, it's called Association for People with Disabilities, APD for short. Most of our kids need that kind of setting. But the problem is most of those homes are for adults. There might be one or two in the entire state that might cover kids. But you're talking about a house that's probably licensed for up to six. So maybe 12 kids is the most that a house could possibly do between two houses. So our goal is to take in the kids that need that housing until they can get to the housing that they need, just because of my background. Because when we started this originally, we weren't taking kids with autism. We were taking at-risk kids, which would be, you know, kids in, you know, they can get in trouble and go to juvenile detention center. Maybe they've been involved in human trafficking. Those kinds of kids we had at first, and it didn't really work how we wanted to. And it wasn't until I ran to a friend. I know how to work with kids that they have autism, that are different, that are challenged. But when you're talking about kids that have really experienced trauma, you're talking about more emotional behavior disorders, that's totally different than just kids with autism that are like, you know, they're built on routine. So it wasn't working. It was a lot of broken. I learned a lot. I learned that about doors. I learned, you know, you need solid core doors, because we had one of our doors when the kids got upset and just kept kicking it, put a hole in it. So we had a lot of broken stuff. And I was just like, you know what? This is not going to work. So we actually closed. And then I just ran to a friend at a conference and I told him what happened. He's like, why don't you take kids with autism? It was like a light bulb went off. And I was like, I didn't know we could. And we reopened maybe a couple months after that. And here we are now. It's been totally different with our kids, just the way our program works. And we set up things because they're so routine. I love that routine is key.
Are you a routine guy in general?
I am. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So it works great to know, like, hey, you come home, you put your book back down, we have snack, we work on whatever we're working on. We take showers, we have dinner, we go to bed. Our kids, probably as early as 6:30, 7:30, they want to go to sleep. It's not like we're telling them to go to sleep. Usually we try to do 8:30 and they go to sleep. We don't really have a lot of trouble with that. Only issue is, yes, they do sleep 11 hours or so, 11, 10 hours. But if you go to sleep at 6:30, that means you're waking up at 5:30 sometimes. So that's not fun to see. They're up like, hey, I just slept all day. So what are we doing now? So
and you're no.
Are you so tired of flipping through your Cooper and Ethics book while you're studying? Yeah, well, guess what? So are we. We created the coolest coloring and activity book. So you get to color in your amazing notes while doing awesome activities to keep your studying interesting and fun AF. Oh, are you wondering about the CMOT, right? You now have a coloring book and you're gonna need something that's really valuable. We have the best dual brush markers ever. Yeah, you can get it as a bundle too. We've got you. Head over to www.studynotesaba.com, look up the coloring and activities book and get yours today. You won't regret it. Love you, mean it.
So these individuals who are in foster care, let's say with autism or intellectual disabilities, are they there for a lot of the same reasons that, let's say, these high-risk individuals are there? Like, a lot of these high-risk youth maybe have parents like in and out of prison or using drugs, unless I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No.
Using drugs or, you know, delinquent. I don't know.
Yeah, no, they're in for the same reasons as kids that are considered at risk. They're in the system for the same reason. Maybe they have no family, all parents passed away, there's no outside family, and they in the system, they do a good search too. Like, they, I don't know how they do it, and they search for any related, you know, family members, and we don't have any. You know, they just have to place you somewhere until they can figure things out, because the ultimate goal at that point is adoption. And that's hard to adopt, especially when you're talking about older kids. After 6 or 7, it gets difficult. And then we have some kids, like you were talking about, drugs and alcohol, you know, they just can't, you know, stay in the house because parents are having issues that are causing the police to come out. And sadly, you know, you have some kids, sexual abuse from within the family, and they have to be removed. And that's probably the saddest one to hear. And personally, I read some of the reports. My wife handles reading that. It's a lot to read, you know, because they go into details and it's horrible. You can't even imagine some of it.
So I have a question. I'm trying to wrap my head around. So the foster care system, like, say a caseworker goes in and they have to remove the kid. Do they go somewhere before they come to, like, a family, or is that the step that they go right to a family or right to a group home?
They'll remove them and they will look for a house. So sometimes they have people they can reach out to that are licensed, like foster care parents. And they'll first see, hey, can they go there? Or if they can't get them there, let's just say it happens overnight. Usually if it happens overnight, they'll just end up in the office. And the sad part is, I'm talking about the office of wherever they work, but the sad part is a lot of times they're there for a lot of days. So maybe the kid is going to school. So no matter where the school is, they'll still get them to school, but then they'll pick them up and they may still be looking for a place. So we've had some kids that they'll go someplace after school, they'll be in the after school program, but then they go someplace just to sleep at night during the week. And then on the weekends, they have a separate person they live with. And when you're talking about kids with autism, you're talking about routine. That's kind of throws them off. Well, I'm here during the week. And it could be late because, you know, a lot of the parents in foster care, they work regular jobs. So sometimes they can't get the kids to 8 o'clock. Let's say the kid needs to get up at 5 or 6. So you have to go get the kid. Hopefully they've eaten. Then you need to, you know, he might have to feed them, possibly shower, go to sleep. Okay, then they have to get up and go through their whole routine. And it's not even really a routine. It's just kind of like you're hoping that they're able to stay there during the week. And it's just such a shortage of foster parents out there. And that's probably one of the better situations, because the worst situation is you're at the office and they just have like a cot for you to sleep on while they
even at the office sleeping there with them.
They have staff. Maybe sometimes it might be the caseworker. And, you know, a lot of times caseworkers are easily overworked because on top of their huge caseload. They can easily have 45, 50 kids on a caseload. And they have one kid, they're trying to figure out, okay, where's he going to sleep his head at night? And that's like the worst feeling.
Can't even knowing
that, man, there are a lot of kids out here that just don't have a bed to go to.
It's absolutely heartbreaking. Like, I've never really thought about it in detail like this, of like, where do they go if there is no place to put them? Like, the fact that they're in an office on a cot.
Not only like, that, like, I just am thinking, if a kid, like, ends up with you and, like, this is your passion and, like, what a blessing. But also, like, if you look at, like, the contingencies and, like, the MOs, right, of, like, it's unfortunate, but why are, I'm not saying that everyone is bad, okay? But there has got to be plenty of people, and I've just, like, read, like, people's different, like, biographies and stuff. These people aren't necessarily always in the foster system or adoption for the right reason.
No, that's true. We've had some kids. Yeah, we've had some kids, and we've seen that they've been removed from their past foster care homes because of abuse. It might not necessarily be sexual abuse. Maybe it might be some type of physical abuse. But you think about the kids they're dealing with, and I don't necessarily know that when some parents say yes, that they know what they're getting into. And it's like, hey, you might deal with screaming. So for me, when I work, sometimes I still work shifts, and I'm always in and out of the house. We have a screamer. These headphones I have on my head now, I will put them on, turn them on. I can still hear, but it just lowers the frequency of that piercing scream that, like it's so loud. I put these on, and it's relaxing, so they can scream all they want. And honestly, when they're screaming, sometimes that's their communication, because we're talking about, you know, I'm thinking about, one of our 7-year-olds, I'm like, he's never had any type of services. You know, we're struggling even within the schools to get things like speech services. So this kid has no way to communicate. You know, we're kind of teaching them. They have a core board, like the communication board, but you're talking about somebody that's 7 and you're trying to teach them to communicate. Super smart. I always laugh because I try to, you know, do my whole ABA thing. So when they came to us, we were having issues tablet time. He would play certain games like Temple Run, and he would lose. He would scream, and it would be a loud scream. It kept happening. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to take all these games that you're screaming about. I'm just going to delete them off the tablet. I deleted every single game off the tablet. I come back the next day. He had downloaded all of them. I was like, oh, you know how to spell. Okay, I can fix this. Let me just disconnect from the internet at a certain time. So I was like, I can't believe it. So it just, yeah, it kind of showed me. I was like, there's, even though they might not be vocally verbal. I said they can communicate in other ways, mm-hmm. because clearly you can spell if you found the 15 games that I just deleted.
You have to type those in.
Yes.
Wow. So what does a day look like in a group home, like your setting, and how do you staff it?
And is this your full-time thing?
Right now, yes. This is
100%. I mean, it's a full-time job.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a full-time job. So a day, let's see. We do have staff for the most part. I tell my wife we're always hiring because, you know, things happen. People leave. So when we do have it fully staffed, we have like somebody comes in from 6:30 to 9:30 and they just help the kids get ready. But we have an overnight shift of 12 to 8. So our kids, for the most part, if it's a good day, they're not going to get up to 6:30. So when they get up, breakfast, brush teeth, we have to get one out the door because the bus comes at 7:20. And the other kids, their bus comes a little bit later. So they're just getting ready, brushing their teeth. And let's see, we put on something on PBS for them to watch. And then we'll get them to school. If I'm fortunate, I'm not going to get a phone call that somebody needs to be picked up early. Because one of the things I've learned is the kids get sick very easily. And I've heard with autism, I've been, you know, researching even more because I've heard about weakened immune systems, but I'm really experiencing it as they get sick. So if I'm fortunate, nobody needs to be picked up. The first bus comes at about 3:10. We'll get them off the bus and then we'll wait for the next bus that should come at 3:30. And then we just drive. The bus stop is up the street. So we just drive down the street. Snack is already out because we have somebody that's there of a shift for 2:30 to 6:30 before the 4 to 12 person comes in.
So what if someone gets sick in the daytime? Do you have someone who goes to the house or is that you?
No, only reason somebody would be there if they're covering the shift. So we have somebody that can be there, but if for some reason they can't, then it's me. But usually they won't call at that time. They always wait to like 12:30. And I'm always wondering if it's a reason why it's always around that time, because once you're sick, you can't come back for another 24 hours. And I know some of our kids, some of them are a lot of work. So I'm just like, okay, you call me at 12:30, so they can't come back until another day.
There's an MO there.
Yeah, so if it's a Thursday, you won't see them on the Monday because Friday there's no school. So we've been working on that, and that's part of, you know, when you have kids in your care, you're responsible for them being sick. So we have to, you know, get them to the doctor, get them to a MinuteClinic or something, and we're just figuring out, hey, what's wrong? Because we have one kid, we change a lot of diapers. So I can't wait to get him to the doctor to get a referral to the gastrologist so we can see what's going on, because that's not normal to eat and come out. I said, that is too good of a system to have.
I wish.
These are like your kids, though. Like the way you're running, like these are extensions. You're taking them to the doctor. You're doing like everything that a parent would do.
Yeah. Once they're in your care, that's it. So our kids are not within the county that we're from. So they have caseworkers that are, they call them like courtesy workers. And they just come once a month to physically check on them, make sure they're breathing and stuff. But when it comes to like transportation, which we struggle with, it's up to us. So I'm always having to look at a schedule and figure out, okay, we can make this person's appointment at this time and we can still get them to school. But this person, they're going to have to go another day. So even though I feel like that's the one thing I hated when I used to do ABA and have a clinic was scheduling. I'm still finding myself scheduling, but in a different way, trying to get them to necessary appointments because some of them need counseling because of the trauma that they've experienced. So we're trying to, first you have to figure out, well, who takes their insurance? Because if you're in the child welfare system, the foster care system, you have Medicaid. Love Medicaid because they cover everything, but you have to find a provider that takes it and that's taking new clients, because a lot of people will put a cap on, we're only going to take X amount of, you know, Medicaid clients. So you have to go to a larger healthcare system. I personally would love to use a smaller mom and pop one, but they can't take but so many, you know, Medicaid. I understand it's a business at the end of the day. So they can only take so many Medicaid clients. So then I have to find the doctor, which I'm fortunate here. We have a good hospital system. We have two, and I use one of them. And they've been great to get referrals because our kids need certain things. Like, I didn't know Pediasure was covered with Medicaid. So I have a 12-year-old. He won't eat, but he thinks Pediasure is a milkshake. So he gets it every month, 31-day supply. It comes, we give it to him. We tell him, hey, here's your milkshake.
What about diapers?
Yes. I have
that kid. Expensive as shit. I'm like ready for Kobe to like be done. Potty train.
They send them to our door. They get a month's supply. We have actually two kids that have diapers. One doesn't really need it. It's just for emergency purpose. But one of our kids, he needs it. So they send it to the house. We always put a pack each. I tell staff every Sunday, put a fresh pack in his book bag because they change them probably about three times at school. So I'm doing the math. I'm like, if I'm fortunate, it's only three times. So I'm like, all right, it's going to need 15 diapers for the week. So it leaves two because 17 that comes in a pack that they send to you. But sometimes he goes through more and sometimes they'll let you know that being like, hey, we need more diapers, or they'll wait till like, hey, we don't have any more diapers inside. So you're asking me to come up there. that's what you need to start sending Swift. Like, don't even tell me you don't have diapers. Just say, hey, we need you to come up here with diapers.
Like the amount of like supply chain and like time management that you're having to do, because like I'm thinking like, and granted I have one child and like a business running, whatever it is, I'm like, I am always like, oh no, like yesterday I'm like down to the last four Paw Patrol diapers. Granted, I have many Costco diapers, but like this is gonna be a big deal if he doesn't have the Paw Patrol ones, and I'm not into this like. I don't really want the breakdown. I have no time for it. So I'm going to order these, make sure they're here. Like, you're having to do that with, like, multiple kids. Technically, could you have more kids in your house or no?
Right now, we're at four. We're licensed for six. We have four, but two of them have to have the room to themselves. So right now, we're at a gridlock that we can't take anybody. It is a lot, and I will say I'm fortunate that I just handle the staff and the kids. My wife handles all the non-fun stuff like paperwork and
the amount of paperwork you must be doing, because like
it's a lot, especially in the beginning. It's a lot because when we do intake, it's like a million forms, so like she walked me through, like she always highlights, like you need to make sure they sign here, read this. So I don't have to think as much because I still have two kids.
But your wife must be teaching, because I actually, so my brother, like once he turned, was it 18, you know, you have to become like a guardian. You have to like get a lawyer, become a guardian, mm-hmm. whatever it is. And, you know, you probably like to understand all like the potential services that like an individual is eligible for, or getting on these wait lists, or like, I mean, my mom every month has to, because he lives at home, has to like, and I guess she's like, they make it as if he's like, quote unquote, renting from my parents, oh, okay. I think like his social security. I don't really know. Not my parents do that. I mean, they have to. And like they'll come and they'll check the water temperature. They'll check the, right? Do they do that? Like how hot the water? Where's your fire extinguisher?
What's yes. Like, so for our license, we don't have to go through the temperature checks other than when they come for relicensing. But the other house that the boys need, that's when they do that kind of stuff monthly. So fortunately, we do, you know, fire drills, because we do have the fire sprinklers and the fire alarm. And we go through that. And luckily, I tell the boys, tell them ahead, like, hey, this is about to go off. Put your headphones on if you need it. We're about to do a fire drill. So that goes smooth. So it is a lot of paperwork just with the licensing. So I always tell people when they ask me about what does it take? And I'm like, I know how to like run maybe the day-to-day, but the paperwork that it takes to actually get licensed, I say, you need to talk to somebody else. You got to talk to her. I don't know. There's a lot. I looked at the handbook of stuff that she has. I'm just like, my brain can't comprehend that. And I wish I would have known that my last business. I said, if I was smart, I would have had her doing stuff too, but I wanted to do everything on my own. I learned my lesson. No, don't do that.
If you don't have to. Contact with that contingency.
Every man needs a woman. So I'm just kidding. You just need a deep. I'm a woman, and I'm not the one to read any detail. That is something that would be like too much response effort. I can't do this. Like that's when I realized you actually have to have someone. Like if you are doing a business, for anyone who is an entrepreneur in anything, like if there's something that's not your strength potentially, like, I know that if it comes to fine print, it's not going to be me. If it comes to reading rules or regulations or anything that are going to be compliant, like I know that I'm not good at that. So. But like for what you're doing, you really need that compliance. That's actually why I'm always like, thank God I'm in test prep, because I can really teach people by like writing my notes in a pile of shit. Whereas like, I was like, for example, on our CEU part where there is more compliance and like making sure you maintain records and you're accredited and the different things, like we have a type A person doing that. But like, it just shows that like you need that, your wife looking over, like dotting the I's and the T's.
Yeah, that part, she does great. So when we reopened, because I remember we closed, we actually tried to sell the property. So where we are, we have 3.6 acres out there. So we actually tried to sell it, try to get some of our money back. And we couldn't sell it. And we decided, you know, hey, we're going to reopen. I went to her and I told her, I said, I just need you to do the paperwork. Because I knew going to her, I was like, after the experience that we had, because she was mostly there the first go around, because I had another business And so I wasn't there as much. And I was like, man, this is going to work. I'm going to have to be there. So I remember going to her, you know, kind of nervous. I was like, all right, let's go. Let's ask this question. And I told her, she looked at me and she said, yes. And I said, I just need you just to handle the paperwork. I'll handle the kids and staff. So anytime, you know, we get calls sometimes, somebody doesn't show up in the middle of the night. I just, in my head, I've already made up, I'm going to have to go. I said, you will never have to go unless for some reason I'm in the hospital. That's the only way. Other than that, no, yeah. I'll be here. This is what I'm doing because she still works someplace else. And I'm just, I don't know how she does it. Wow. And I'm like, my brain can't operate to do what she does.
Good woman. I have a question though. How long do they stay with you and where do they go after? Are you guys like having to be looking for foster families or?
So for us, we're not supposed to be like permanent housing, but we're unique. There's nobody else that offers this type of housing, you know, within the state. So our kids are probably with us a little bit longer than maybe other places, but there's just, you know, nowhere else like a foster parent that can take them. So we kind of, it's our, it's the word niche or niche, you know, having niche, that is really valuable for us because I don't have to worry about the constant turnover. Because if you have other kids, it's probably a lot easier to place them with a foster parent. Mm-hmm. But when you look at our kids and you read their profile, nobody's really touching that. So the goal is for them not to be with us long. I mean, they always say no longer than 4 months or 6 months, but in reality, it's there's nowhere else to go. And that's why I'm always talking to people about what we do, because I'm like, hey, you can be a foster parent. You can do this to help out the system, because we do need more. We need more homes. And that's one of the purposes of why we bought the property we had, because instead of trying to buy one home and going out and looking for another piece of property, we can just build out there. And then after we do that, let me see how tired I am. If I am tired, then we'll go look to do this somewhere else in the same city, maybe go further south within Florida. Or
I mean,
like, so you're looking to grow. Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Our current statistics of right now, as this episode comes out, I don't know, it's always changing. There's 1 in 36 individuals with autism. Mm-hmm. So that means, I don't know what the size of the foster system is, but that means that like you're the one out doing this, let's say. What's happening to all these other children and individuals with autism?
So I used to work with our Department of Juvenile Justice for a few months with the company. And I remember we had a kid in there. He had autism. And I was kind of shocked that he was there. And when I was just talking with the administration, they were saying that this is the best option for him. I mean, granted, the stuff that he's done, he's in there for a reason, but there's just no place else. So that's kind of, it's a shame. Like, your best option is putting him in juvenile jail because you have nowhere else to go.
Like the models and like to imitate in these.
Yeah, because I mean, they pick up. I mean, gosh, imitation, it's amazing. Because I look at some of our kids, have one, he loves to copy our kiddo that does the toe walking. And I'm like, please don't do that. I said, you're going to hurt yourself trying to walk like that. So imagine if imitation is something you pick up on. If you work in a juvenile detention center, you see some stuff and you hear some stuff. So like language they've never had before or heard, they pick up everything and they're so vulnerable. That's the biggest thing, because for them, they don't realize, you know, personal space. And that's kind of what I'm dealing with now. Like I'm working with them like, hey, we went to the airport and we did a tour, got on the plane and we got to take a picture with the pilot. And I remember it was time to take a picture and I'm putting my arms around the guys and then the other kid just puts his arm like below my waist. I'm like, hey, this is what you do here. You put it above the waist. Never just grab somebody like that. You need to ask if you're going to do that. But I don't, and I'm like, I don't think it's ever going to be an appropriate time to do that. They don't know me. This is for my older kids. And that's the stuff we work on. Social skills. Hygiene is big, as simple as washing your hair. Like yesterday, I took them all to get haircuts. And I told them, hey, you got to make sure you wash your hair after this haircut. You have all this stuff in there. Stuff that might seem simple for anybody else is not that simple for us. I'm unfortunate everybody can feed themselves independently, but one of my little ones, he eats a little bit. He runs to the couch. He runs back. He eats a little bit. Constant back and forth. I'm just sitting there. I'm just taking data like, how many times does he do this? How long is it going to take him to eat this piece of bread? It takes like an hour. And then it's just like,
oh my God. It takes patience. It takes such patience.
It does. That's what I've learned doing this because I thought I had a lot of patience. And with the kids we have, I'm like, wow, I have more patience than I thought. And I'm learning to grow more because our kids have gone through so much. So they get very emotional. We have one that he can cry on the dime about anything. Wakes up in the morning, asks him to brush your teeth. He cried about that. He cried if you give him something he doesn't want. Maybe he doesn't want milk in the cereal today, but the other 5 days you wanted milk. So it's just amazing. You just have to just remember they've gone through a lot. Yeah, that's what I've learned.
Talk about trauma-informed ABA.
Truly, I didn't even really understand, you know, just being trauma-informed with everything. That's one of the classes they make you take with licensing. It's about being trauma-informed. And I've been amazed because I've learned a lot. And I can't even imagine how you process what you've been through, especially when it comes to things like sexual abuse. It's like, man, how do you process that you've gone through that or you've been forced to do certain things at a young age? I'm like, you're going to have counseling for life. I can't imagine, I'm going to be good in 4 years. You don't forget that. So imagine you're constantly processing like relationships. Like, how does that work? If you ever want to have one with anybody, with what you've gone through, that's just so much.
This actually brings me to something I want to ask. And you said that you've done the foster care thing, not only with individuals on the spectrum, but you also know the high risk individuals. And my question is regarding nature versus nurture. And the reason I want to ask this is one of my family's good family friends was one of my dad's good friends. He was a single guy. He actually only got married now, in his 50s. But, he really wanted kids. So he decided to adopt a little boy at the time. And he was 6 years old. Started off, a visit, whatever it is, and it turned into adoption. It might have started as foster, potentially. And, he gave this kid the best life. Like, they were always going on trips to, South Africa, where he was from, or, Aruba, or, he had the means to do it. And he was like, I wanted a kid always. I haven't been given the opportunity to have, a child. I never met someone. And so I'm going to adopt. And the child did have some learning disabilities. He was always in different meetings, whatever it is. And it's you got him at age 6. And it was amazing to watch. He happened to be the same age as my brother. And so he'd bring his son over to the house. And I remember from a young age, my brother didn't really speak much, just a little, just because he's on the spectrum. And he'd come and we'd catch him stealing things, right? My brother's best games. He'd be pocketing them, and then someone would see it and be like, hey, you're going to need to give that back, whatever, And over time, which those things made sense, as he was that's what he had been around. But so he had raised him, was teaching him the right things, this and that. And then at, 15 or something in school, he got a girl pregnant. And, I just remember my dad's friend, trying to figure out how to navigate this and that. And I was that was my first real thought of this nature versus nurture, potentially. He was trying to teach him all the right things to do, these different things. And then he ran away. And at a certain point, once he turned 18, there was nothing he could do. Right. And it was kind of the end of that? Like,
yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? I'm not saying it's for everyone. Obviously, everything is individualized. But, like, it's crazy because even by age 6, right? I'm like, that's pretty young.
No, but you think about, I'm trying to think about the development psych of children. I think they say by like 2, you know, they learn so many words, because even at 1, like, they're listening, they're learning. So imagine what they're seeing. So I think about our kids that we have now, and of course now they have the best life possible. They get whatever they want, but they have seen things. They've seen things the first 6-7 years, you know, some of them 12 years of life. And it's like, how do you just forget it? And even the things that they've experienced or that they've been forced to do, it's like, okay, now that they're not being forced to do this, they're around other kids, and we have to watch some of them because they have, you know, sexual behaviors. Like, it's a reason why some of them have to have the room to themselves, because they've been forced to do things. And even though, you know, they're in a great place now,
they make these kids engage in sexual behavior.
Some of them. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, I'd want to kill the parents or whoever was doing that. I literally.
Yes, it's sick. I don't like to think about it. That's why I said I don't like to read the forms, because if you see something like that, or even I talk to the caseworkers, they'll tell me more history about what happened. But it's amazing to see, even though they're out of that environment, you still have to watch them, because to them, they think it's normal maybe to, you know, touch, or, and you have to tell, like, teach them, hey, that's not appropriate. If you want to tell them something or let them know something, use your words. Let's not touch. But that's what you've seen for however long, because you never know. You know, we'll say they're 7 now. I mean, the caseworker might have, or whoever reported it, caught it at age 6. How long has this been going on? Was it just when they turned 6? Was it when they turned 5, 4?
Since they were a baby, who knows?
Out there, 3 years old, maybe. You don't know. You just know from how long, from when you got them. But I said they've experienced this, and to them, it's normal. They don't know the difference between right or wrong. 7 years old, I mean, I know some people like to pretend like they know, but if your parent says this is right, this is right. And that's when counseling comes into handy, and that's the struggle too, because you're looking for counselors that specialize in certain things like sexual behaviors. And it comes back to insurance. Who takes your insurance? And that's a real struggle, because you might find the best counselor. Usually with counseling,
honestly, even with like private, like PPO insurance, to find mental health help, like psychologists.
That's the best. Private is the best way. Yeah, but that's the best
way.
But
I'm saying, even with that, it's hard.
Yeah, it is, and it gets expensive, because usually when you specialize in something, it does get expensive because nobody else can do what you do. So then you're charging these numbers where there are people out there. What I've learned, especially in certain areas, people have money. And I said they will pay a large amount. So it's like, if I can charge X amount of dollars, then this is going to be my clientele. I just can't help the other clientele that needed to.
Matching law. Right? Behavior.
That's the sad part.
Mm-hmm. I want to just also have you, Arthur, like, switching a little bit, tell everyone about what podcast you've started and what
his
mission is.
So I started the Behavioral Business Blueprints. I started it, I bought the equipment last year, and finally said I'm going to do it this year. And the whole mission of it is, the whole mission is just to talk to people that have started any type of behavioral business. And I say that because I have like a doctor about to interview, and I was talking to him about what I'm looking to do. And I said, you know, mental health is physical health. Behavioral health is just your primary care health as well. It all blends together. But my passion came from the last business. I had an ABA business that I sold. And I just remember I was learning so much during that time. I didn't know anything about business, but I learned so much. And I'm talking to people that have been doing it for years, and they're kind of explaining numbers to me about the business. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, if I could do it all over again, I should have done XYZ first. But I also know that people need to hear this and learn, because there might be somebody on the fence that want to start a business. So I want them just to hear a story and just learn something from them. I mean, I'm not going to go over how to start an ABA business. That's not the whole purpose of it. I want them to know how to start different businesses. ABA is just, that's my field. So I know a lot of ABA people, but we have some other
generalize. People. They could generalize the lessons across whatever business they're doing.
Yeah, and that's the goal. Because when I started, I had a business coach to start the ABA business. And I reached out to her a couple of weeks ago and I told her, you know, just thank you. I said, you know, the information that you gave me, I thought it was just how to start an ABA business, but this is how to start any business. And at the time, I didn't realize that until I started, you know, the group home. I'm like, wow, the same information is important. You know, having an accountant, knowing your numbers, how much are you bringing in? How much is going out? I'm just thinking, hey, that's ABA related. Only thing I don't have to deal with right now, at least I say for now, is insurance, because we're not doing anything insurance related, anything. If our kids do need ABA services, I gladly outsource it and I reach out to everybody to see who doesn't have a 6-month waiting list, just to get them the services that they need. But that's the whole purpose of that, of the podcast, just get inspired, hear a few gems from people that have some that are currently in the business, like Liat, or talk to people that have exited. I had somebody that handles mergers and acquisitions only for behavioral health companies. And having these conversations, I'm learning selfishly. I'm doing this for myself too, because I'm learning a lot, especially when I talk to somebody that do like mergers and acquisitions. And I'm listening, I'm just like, oh my gosh, because in my head, I'm thinking X amount of dollars is a lot. But then you start talking to somebody that deals with selling companies 50 million, you're like, well, how do you even do that? Because my brain can't even wrap around how to get to like a million or 2 million that quickly. Companies are just doing it every day. So I love being able to talk to people and share their information and share their story, because I was inspired by somebody to start a business. Because honestly, if I was in any other ABA group, if I asked anybody, hey, should I start an ABA business after passing? Most people would have said no. I probably would have told myself no. But I had somebody that encouraged me, my clinical director, for like 3 months straight, because it's during COVID. So I got to see him a lot. I tell him every day, thank you, because without your push, even if it was annoying at times, I wouldn't be here.
I love that. It's good to have those people that
like some push people you. Like, there is something to be said for learning from others first. And like I tell like people, like maybe if you're offered like these clinical director positions before you ever even like been a BCBA, maybe think twice. But there is something about learning through contingency shaped behavior, you know? Like I could say, I know Casey and I, we've learned a shit ton by like coming into contact with the consequences of doing things in a business. I'm like, well, I'm never doing that again, or well,
yeah,
it was fun, or holy shit. We it blew up the
news. How did we not learn our lesson and we did it again?
Yep.
Yeah. I so, love that. I'm excited to listen to it.
Yes, please go on, listen. Every Wednesday, it should drop by 7 a.m. I think I'm going to change it to 12 a.m. because what's the difference between 12 and 7? I just want to make sure it's done weekly. That's my goal. I keep saying I'm going to do it weekly. So I'm trying to get ahead and get people on. But then I'm starting to see that doing multiple episodes in a week is a little bit stressful. It sounded great at first, but trying to get people on, and then with our kids,
schedules,
you know, at the top of a dime, I have to go.
I tell you the best thing you'll ever do, and I'm not just doing this to like suck up to our producer here. You could do way more podcasts, by the way, if you get to a point and you get someone like Alan, who like we could just come on, talk, and leave and not think about it again. It's like the editing after the this. So like we'll try like bank a lot of episodes at one time, and then we'll be like, we have 13 in the bank. We could chill for however long, and then suddenly it's like we have none. We have to get them all in. So,
no, I definitely do. I've looked at that, and I said when I did this, I said, right now, I'm going to try to figure this out just to know how to do it. But I said,
just as know I how to do going, everything, yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing I've learned from the last business is, because so many people say, well, you know, outsource this, do this. I said, I just want to know how to do it. So once I do have some money saved up, I can afford to pay somebody to do it. But at least let me know how to. Because I remember the last business, or I meet a lot of people when it comes to like billing. And somebody's like, yeah. Well, my billers walked out. Well, now I was doing billing myself for a long time. So when I finally got somebody, I made a task analysis, and I wrote it step by step. So the next person I brought on, all I do is just send it over to them, walk them through it in super detail. I don't want anybody to think like, what's next? No, step by step, just like any ABA business, just like you for somebody. Yes.
I know I heard this saying, like, don't hire for a role that you don't know how to do. Because it's going to bite you in the ass.
I've heard that. And I guess I think my biggest issue is because the people I meet have been doing this for so long, but they're not necessarily a lot of business owners that I meet, especially for ABA. Some are actually BCBAs, so they all seem to start the same way of starting their own. But when you meet larger companies and they're the CEO of the company, they've been a CEO of other companies, but they don't necessarily know the day-to-day. And that's good and bad. I'm all for it. I'm like, hey, if you're making a change in kids' lives, great. I know some people might have issues with that, but I know running a business costs money, and these bigger businesses, it takes a lot of resources. I don't think a lot of people, especially within our field, when I'm on these Facebook groups, I'm like, you have no idea. Yes, you made X amount of dollars, but how much did you put out in payroll or materials, insurance? And some insurances are very expensive, especially with our group home. Like, we struggled in the beginning trying to find insurance. And then there was like one person literally in the entire state, which I'm still trying to make that not true, because I'm like, this cannot be the only insurance. I would probably call it 30 places, and only one place covers one of the insurances that we have. And they charge a lot too. And I'm like, supply and demand. I said, I'm not even upset. I said, I get it. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I am upset, but at the same time, I'm like, I get it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You relate. Well, Arthur, this has been wonderful. I'm so happy to have you on finally after knowing you since 2019.
Yes, I'm still going to say you guys need to have like a meetup. Thank you. You guys still need to have a meetup at one of these big conferences just to meet everybody. And I had said that maybe 3-4 years ago. Something happened. You guys were going to.
It was ABAI. We've canceled twice because I think Liat had. Once was divorce, once was Kobe in the NICU. There was just so much. Yeah. Life has been crazy these last 4 years. And I'm always saying, I can't wait till things calm down, but I don't think that's ever going to happen. So
just invite everybody to make it a point
and do it. I know.
Yeah, just invite everybody to Dallas restaurants.
We want to do a conference.
You should definitely do it because you guys were going to speak. You were going to speak last year. I remember at a conference. It was in.
It's our favorite thing to cancel. Yeah.
Yeah, it was in Miami. And I remember that you guys weren't there. And I was like, that's a perfect conference. And they're not doing that conference this year. I didn't see them post about it. But if you guys did one, I mean, you get a lot of people. I mean, you know so many people, and so many people know your brand between you got study notes, you got the podcast. Yeah. That's a lot.
People will show up. Now, I will show the app.
You guys have
I can't wait to meet you in person.
I love your newsletter. I'm just looking at this. I'm just like, I just love the vibe. It's like that up-to-date 90s vibe. I'm like, man, it's 90s, but it's like update for 2000s.
Millennial 90s.
Martha had other newsletters listening and like rocking on the side that you said.
She doesn't. Yes. Go for it.
Is that the sister? Is that your sister?
She's thrilled.
No, Martha's our newest. She's like
everything.
Our assistant, our newsletter, our podcast helper, our get shit done baby. I love her.
I want to get there with the group home. I want to be able to, you know, get a newsletter and stuff. Yes. Working now on the website's the biggest thing. We're going to do a video first so I can hand it over to people that are going to work on the website. just to get, you know, tell about what we do. Because the biggest thing with us, a lot of people ask, well, how do you get clients? I said, these agencies will find you. You just call, you let them know. It's not like your traditional, like, put a posting, hey, I have a bed, you know, available. No.
Right.
You just tell them that you have this. They'll contact you because there's so many kids everywhere. And I know we didn't talk specifically about areas. You know, I'm in the North area. But if you look at the Tampa area, it's probably like your biggest area of a lot of kids in foster care. It's probably in the state of Florida, it's the number one place for sex trafficking, which I still can't figure out why is it Tampa? What's happening there? Because I would think Miami, because you're right there at the water, people can come from anywhere, but it's Tampa. And so much going on. And I've learned over the years, because I'm always paying attention now when I'm in the airport, I make sure I don't see anything funny to report because it's scary. Kids are literally just missing here in Florida. I'm just like, are people snatching them up? Or, you know, are they just running away? That's not normal for kids are just to not come back home. You leave, but you don't come back home.
No, that's so scary. Oh my God. Well, we will meet up and I would love to come to Florida, to be honest.
We'll come to our state conference. I'll be there. It's in Miami this year. Sometime in September year. I'll be there. I think I'm going to present. I don't know. I think I want to do something on like starting the ABA business and just talking about other stuff outside the beginning things. I want to talk about technology you should use. You know, AI is big and there's so much out here that I'm learning about every day because I live on LinkedIn. So I'm always talking to all these people like, oh my gosh, if I had this technology, like, especially with the note writing, I could go on about that, the struggles of trying to teach how to write notes. And then somebody shows me this technology that's not ChatGPT and you can collect data. You can put in a little bit of this. Yeah. It shoots out the note within the app. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Makes life so much easier.
Yes. Because I'm like, I'm hiring people for their ability to work with kids and implement the program. I'm not hiring them for their writing ability.
Because they're English major, right?
Yeah, that's hard, especially if you speak another language. You're bilingual and you're trying to, you know, write English, but, you know, you speak three, four other languages. I shouldn't matter if you struggle a little bit.
True.
Insurance cares. They don't understand.
Yep.
Arthur, thank you so much. I tell you, you've made me like think about a lot of different things that like personally.
Open that group home. I'm telling you.
Yeah, all of it. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You're amazing. And guys, go check out his podcast, The Business Blueprint.
Behavioral Business Blueprint.
I'm sorry. Go
I
check
knew
it
you're
out.
You're going to get it wrong.
I think I get everything wrong. I'd get our website wrong too, but I'm going to see if I can get ours right. So you guys know where you can find us. You can find us on behaviorbitches.com. You can find us on Instagram at Behavior Bitches Podcast, on Facebook at Behavior Bitches Podcast. And if you go to our website, you could always, if you there's a topic you want to talk about, if there's someone you want on in the ABA space, or as I love also outside the ABA space, please make any recommendations. Go leave us a 5-star review in the Apple Podcast app. And as always, love ya.
Mean it.
Hey guys, it's Liat
and Casey.
We just want to take a second to let you know that if you're thinking of being a millennial like us and starting your own podcast, there is a way.
You can do your show without having to become an audio editing and production wizard. Because guess what? We don't know shit with that. But we have Alan at Pretty Easy Podcast who helped us get started. He records our shows. He posts them. He adds awesome, awesome music and cool shit when we don't even know what he's doing. He sends us teaser episodes. He does it all. We just sit here and friggin' talk.
We shoot the shit and you can record from home, your office, the park, a bathroom stall at work, it doesn't matter. He provides the complete podcast studio All you need is a microphone and you're good.
Allen caters to your schedule and gives you a producer for your show at your beck and call. He has been super flexible with our schedule. Whenever we need him, we go to Google Calendar. We just book him and he does all the hard work. It's like so incredibly easy. That's why it's probably called Pretty Easy Podcast.
So be heard and have some fun podcasting like us. Go to prettyeasypodcast.com today.